from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
President Clinton moves towards closer ties with Africa. Jamaica's opposition threatens court action over a new telecoms bill. And why did Guyana's most wanted criminal have so many sympathizers? I'm Oren Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. President Clinton has made what's regarded as a major policy speech in Africa at the opening of a five-day summit in Washington aimed at improving U.S. relations with the continent. It's called the National Summit on Africa and is aimed at strengthening the African lobby in America. Caribbean countries have been trying to engage the Clinton administration in the same way on a range of questions from bananas to immigration. What wouldn't regional leaders have given for a major policy speech from the U.S. on the Caribbean? Jamaican-born Professor Basil Wilson of the John Jay College in New York is a longtime observer of U.S.-Caribbean relations. I began by asking him whether this was a policy statement, not just in Africa, but the developing world.
The Clinton administration has paid far more attention to Africa than previous administrations. He is one of the few American presidents to have visited the continent of Africa. Recently, you know, Gore went to the UN and they embarked upon a new initiative in terms of providing additional funds for dealing with the AIDS crisis in Africa. On the question of Africa and on the question of race, that the Clinton administration has in fact understood globalization. And I think one thing that he's really trying to get across is that one can no longer function and treat Africa as an invisible continent or pretend that one is not aware of all that is taking place on that continent. I think that the attempts by the Clinton administration to pass the Africa Bill, which would facilitate trade between Africa and the United States, is one that is welcome and it has been held up in the United States Congress.
Can the Caribbean take encouragement from this? After all, they've been engaging with the United States government on a variety of issues, from bananas to drug trafficking.
The banana question is much more problematic. And of course, when Clinton visited and signed the Caribbean Agreement that took place, if I recall correctly, in 1997, which became known as the Bridgestone Resolution, that he really promised much more than he was able to deliver. But also, in addition to that African bill being stymied, there's also the Caribbean Parity Bill, where, you know, Caribbean countries have been trying to get across the notion that since this agreement between Mexico, Canada, and the United States that we know as NAFTA, that the Caribbean has functioned in an extremely disadvantageous position. And one of the things that the NAFTA Parity Bill was supposed to bring about is to equalize that situation between Mexico and Caribbean countries, which had served as a disinvestment.
But can the Caribbean expect to be similarly engaged?
The Caribbean can be expected to be similarly engaged, because I think that especially if the Democrats win back control of the House of Representatives, you will see some movement that will have a wholesome impact on the Caribbean. I think once you can get rid of people like Jesse Helms and those other Neanderthals, I think, you know, the American administration would be much more favorably inclined to pursue policies that would be very much in the interest of both the Caribbean and Africa.
Professor Basil Wilson, the Jamaica Labour Party says it will oppose a new telecommunications bill that was passed last night. GLP leader Edward Siaga says that once the bill becomes law, he'll refer the matter to the Supreme Court. Karen Weir has the details.
After 140 amendments, over 14 hours in 3 days, a telecommunications bill was passed, which aims to liberalise the Jamaican telecom industry over 3 years. Leader of the opposition, Mr. Edward Siaga, is furious, claiming it will give Cable and Wireless Jamaica exclusivity and monopolies they never had before, on the basis of striking a political deal.
Cable and Wireless is to get a super sweetheart deal from the government, on the basis of which they will put lines into remote districts that are politically sensitive to the government for upcoming elections. And that is a great disappointment of the entire thing.
Citing a similar case in Dominica, Mr. Ciago went on to state his party will contest the telecom bill in the Supreme Court as it violates the constitution of the freedom of expression.
In Dominica, that was also the finding of the Supreme Court there. And it's also unconstitutional because it violates another provision in law where if a monopoly owns a facility, it is required to make it available to its competitors at competitive rates. And in this case, cable and wireless is not doing so. The government has locked away the competition in such a way that they all have to deal with cable and wireless, and cable and wireless sets the rates.
Technology Minister Mr. Philip Falwell today rejected this claim, stating the bill does allow for competition.
You're going to have competition on customer premises equipment. You're going to have competition in terms of the reselling of international voice minutes. They are going to have competition from cable broadcasters who will be engaged in last-mile internet service. They're going to have competition from persons who wish to replicate their line, copper line facilities in Jamaica. It is only at the three-year period that the market will be fully liberalized when you will have competition in international voice.
Mr. Ciago concluded by saying, even if Parliament amends the legislation or a court declares against any provision in the legislation, the government will be required to pay Cable and Wireless Jamaica damages, two things unheard of in Jamaica's parliamentary system. From Kingston, Jamaica, this is Karen Weir for BBC Caribbean Report.
The shooting of one of Ghana's most notorious criminals continues to be the subject of discussion in the country. A significant number of people showed up for the funeral of Lyndon London yesterday. The opposition leader Desmond Hoyt accused the police of murder. David Dikeris, the editor of the Daily Stabroek News, helped me to make sense of it all.
There is a bit of a dispute going on as to whether he came out with his hands up. There is some evidence that he did, that there was a negotiation in which he was persuaded to come out. And that has led to a considerable amount of dispute in the newspapers and so on. We've all seen films of Capone and Dillinger and so on. London acquired enormous notoriety from the America Street burglary. There had never been anything like it in Georgetown or in Guyana. In the middle of the day, fellas firing submachine guns in America Street, the heart of the city, and then a daring escape through city streets, Hollywood style. You know, you remember your Jesse James and so on. It's not that you're a hero in the traditional sense, but that you're a notorious criminal. You're famous.
Would that alone account for the show of support he received at his funeral, his flag, his coffin being draped in the Ghana flag?
That, to me, is bizarre, quite frankly. But don't forget the man held out alone for 11 hours, which would further consolidate that notorious reputation, as a very resourceful and determined person, a criminal. And, I mean, some of what has taken place is obviously grossly misplaced. But he's not a hero, but he's a famous criminal, as I say. And crowds are attracted by that sort of thing.
What's your own paper's take on it?
We have been quite critical of what we saw as the shooting of a man who had been negotiated out on the basis that he would not be shot.
How do you interpret Mr. Hoyt's intervention? Was it opportunism on his part or was it genuine concern?
Given the ethnic basis of politics in Guyana and given the PNC's long-standing position that a lot of young black persons are being shot in cold blood by the police, this is not the first incident of this kind. The police have had a practice, I regret to say, going back for some 20 years, of executing criminals. The press release always says that the man had a spade or a cutlass or even a weapon and resisted arrest and was shot. But there have been credible cases where eyewitnesses have disputed this.
David Dikeris, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. least one CARICOM leader says he's looking forward to discussions with the French President Jacques Chirac. Mr. Chirac is scheduled to visit the French Caribbean next month. He signaled that he'd also like to discuss EU-CARICOM economic relations. Dominica's Prime Minister, Rosie Douglas, told Ken Richards he's looking forward to those discussions.
Mr. Chirac is coming at a very good time when we'll be able to at least get our own situation more in line with the new globalization all of us have to confront out there. I think if the Europeans are offering assistance, I think we should at least have a united position on bananas that puts in front of everything else the conditions under which the bananas are grown and the fact that the farmers who are growing bananas are feeling that they're not getting sufficient returns for their labor. And that is where the whole thing begins. I think that immediately Chirac is a good opportunity for Caribbean leaders to get an opportunity to improve and enhance relations with the European Union, which is so important for them at this time.
Mr. Douglas, Mr. Chirac can deal directly with Martinique and Guadeloupe because they are part of France. What can he do in terms of moving forward the CARICOM, the wider CARICOM agenda?
The General Council in both Guadeloupe and Martinique. I was in Martinique a couple of weeks ago. I spoke to Mr. Claude Lys, who is the president of the General Council. And they too feel that there's a movement on the way to give them more autonomy and to allow them to interact more effectively with the other wider Caribbean. So I think we are going to meet President Chirac at a time when there are some changes within the departments themselves. And I think as many other leaders as possible should try to speak with the people from the General Council, both in Guadeloupe and Martinique, so that they get a situation with Mr. Chirac, which would have the backing of the local authorities, both in Guadeloupe and Martinique. I can't compel the other countries to ask for associate membership with the European Union, but I would have met with Prime Minister Lionel Jospin already in France, and I've sent feelers to the French government already on the question of Dominica having a special dispensation with the European Union, and of course beginning with France, so that we will obviously be in a position where we'll be asking for a much closer relationship that I'm sure countries like Trinidad and Jamaica would care for.
Are you doing this through CARICOM? Have you run your plans by CARICOM?
They would have heard my position while in Guadeloupe. And my position is not a secret position. It's a position that is well known. So we are the ones to take the lead in promoting the closest possible relationship, including associate membership.
Dominica's Prime Minister Rosie Douglas talking to Ken Richards. Caribbean jurist Telford Georges has found that the Attorney General of Trinidad and Tobago was illegally attempting to influence the judiciary. It's one of the conclusions of a 35-page document which has just been released. The report was commissioned by the country's Law Association following a complaint by the Chief Justice, Michael de la Bastide, against government interference, which he said threatened the independence of the judiciary. From Port of Spain, Tony Fraser reports.
One of the core contentions of the Chief Justice was that Attorney General Ramesh Maharaj was attempting to dictate how funds passed by the Parliament for the judiciary should be used. According to Justice Georges, the insistence by the Attorney General is an erosion of the principles of the separation of powers guaranteed under the Constitution. The Dominican-born jurist says, once funds are passed by Parliament, it's a matter for the Minister of Finance to disburse those funds and a matter for the Chief Justice to determine how they are spent. President of the Law Association, Carl Hudson Phillips, details the conclusion of Justice Georges.
He has expressed the view that the Attorney General is not responsible in the sense of having any authority over the administration of justice. He has suggested that once appropriate allocations are made under the Appropriation Act, that access and the route should be to the Minister of Finance. He has also suggested that when necessary, there should be interface between the Chief Justice and the Prime Minister.
However, Justice Georges finds that there is no substantiating evidence to support the claim of the Chief Justice that the Attorney General and the government were attempting to remove him from the bench. The Law Association president has offered his services and that of the association to calm the waters between the men of high office. However, Mr. Hudson Phillips was not willing to comment on whether or not there is still need for the commission of inquiry called for by the government. Tony Fraser in Port-au-Spain for BBC Caribbean Report.
And that's our program for today. Before we go, here's a reminder.
This and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
I'm Oren Gordon saying goodbye from London.